가장 대실입니다. 예, 동안 수다 동안에 다음에 손 수다 뒤송한데 가장이다 동안 동안 와인자 다음에 와인 봤수다 주제니 삼로당과 면도와 니 돈에 동안 와인자 다음에 봤어 가장 쉬었다.
'Because it is in the nature of suffering, therefore it is selfless.' I mentioned there are two ways to reflect on this.
Yeah.
You have to analyze those two points which I have already explained to you in the last lesson. You have to think about it over and over again to see whether what I've explained, to see, you know, to understand what I've explained. So, you have to think and come to understand, why? Because it is impermanent, it is in the nature of suffering. And why? Because it is in the nature of suffering, it is selfless. You have to think for it yourself in order to come to an understanding. Because it is impermanent, it is in the nature of suffering. So, but why is it in the nature of suffering? Because it has arisen from karma and afflictions. Yeah. So because it has arisen from common afflictions, it is in the nature of suffering. But then you have to see why, because it is in the nature of suffering, it is selfless. So we have to think from where did the suffering arise? Yeah. So and then based on that, then you go on to see how, why, how, because it is in the nature of suffering, it is selfless. So if one thinks deeply and analyze, you know, where is the source or what is the source of suffering, one should understand and discover that the very root is this ignorance, which is an apprehension of a self, yeah, and that, you know, that basically goes back all the way down to the view of the transitory collection. Yeah. So that's the root of all the suffering. Yeah. So this is a mind which apprehends a self. Yeah, there's a self. Yeah. And although a self is apprehended by such a mind, this ignorance, in reality, such a self that is apprehended by the ignorance does not exist. So the self that is apprehended by this ignorance does not exist whatsoever. But its non-existent has to be proven. Yeah. Its non-existent has to be established. Yeah. And for those of you who have been around for a while, we've already talked about this in the past, isn't it? In general, there are many reasonings that are used to establish selflessness, yeah, such as the reasoning of one and many, or the reasoning of dependent arising. So yeah, so there are different lines of reasonings that one can employ to establish selflessness. So there is the reasoning of dependent arising. There's also the reasoning of one and many. So if we look at the reasoning of one and many, So essentially in this line of reasoning, there are four essential points, yeah, there are four essential points which must be grasped. So the first essential point is the essential point of finding the object of negation. So this is said to be extremely important here. So then based on that, then there's the second essential point of establishing the pervasion. Then the third essential point is establishing that that it is not inherently one. And then the fourth essential point is establishing that it is not inherently different from the aggregates.
다 독신이 제장다 카코데 카코요 이나티다 섬의 하나도 담고 있지 더다 다 배낭조 가진 냐마 시바나 시데 배나 타 타다 루즈 좀 봐세시 배나 타다 루즈 좀 로디기 로디 몰라 아니 칸데시 남도 담고 빼들 섬 담마로 와 배나 타다 루즈 좀 로이 몰 나인도가 칸데 남도 로와 다 주디 여기 초배만 이게 돼 가지고 이제 로디를 남대야지. 내가 텔라로. 거기다 초배만 해. 다 타다 둘도 남에 로티 뭐 아니 두 남도 가는 거 같고. 또 여기 뭐네. 다 주여 돼 가지고 이제 남대기도 와. 어디 빼라 자세. 뒤 빼라 자세. 다가 나신 다 나 세트 남도 가나. 풍부 초배 코랑만 해 가지고 남대야지. 뒤도 집어지지 않습니다. 남수
So the first essential point, the essential point of finding the object of negation is extremely important. But however, it is also very challenging to identify correctly in one's experience the object of negation. Yeah, what exactly is the thing to be targeted? Yeah. Although it isn't difficult, but we have to try. And one should use an analogy, to help us, you know, in finding, or to get us to help us in finding the object of negation. Yeah. So if you remember the analogy of mistaking a coil of rope to be a snake. So. In the view of the mind that is mistaking a coil of rope to be a snake, in the view of that mind, there is a snake appearing from the side of the coil of rope, somewhere there. So likewise, you know, when the I, how does the I, the self, appear to ourselves? How do we appear to ourselves? How does the I appear? The I appear to exist from the side of the body and mind, somewhere in within that collection. So in the view, in the perspective of the mind that mistakes a coil of rope to be a snake, how does that coil of rope appear? It appears in the view of that mind, there's a snake appearing from that coil of rope, yeah. And in the view of this mind, the snake, you know, this concept of snake does not appear as something imputed by the mind. It does not appear as something that is projected by the mind. Yeah. So likewise, when the eye appears, you know, when you think of eye or self, the eye appears to exist from the side of the body and mind. The eye does not appear to us as something that is projected or merely imputed by
thought, yeah. tinde nangsu di ta kashe nangsu ipare rawa tinde ani karsware rangi rangjing ki lei nawa ta rangi lei tinde nangge nawa ta tu ani chi dube chaji mo ba tela kache ase de nawa ta tu dube chaji na ta kache yode si o tu
So this is the manner, this is the way in which the object of negation appears to us. Yeah. So you know, in the view, let's say in the view, you know, back to the example of in the mind mistaking a coil of rope to be a snake. In the view, in the perspective of that mind, there's a snake appearing right there from the side of the coil of rope. Yeah. Likewise, you know, in terms of grasping at the self, you know, in the view of this mind, the eye appears to exist from the side of the body and mind, projecting itself from the side of the body and mind. Without it, you know, it does not appear as something that is merely imputed by the mind, but it appears as something that exists from the side of the body and mind. So this is how the object of negation, the inherently existent I, appears to us. Yeah.
Oh, doctor, that today, ne, Ramon, ne, Juba, na, today, Nang Chai, the, that guy quite simple. Just now, ane, just Kangsa Nang Zhong Se, the guy, Paris, right? Kangsa Ramon, ne, Juba, Nang De, today, ane, just Nang Chai, the guy quite simple. That guy quite simple, that Kangsa Nang Zhong Se, the guy, Paris, right? Nang Zhong Se, you are. Nang zum se di xiao guo, yu guo. Kang sa zhang wen zhu ban na nang xia di ga guai xi. Nang zum di gai ma le shi da tu da.
So this is the way in which the object of negation appears to us. Yeah. So in terms of the inherently existent I, you know, there's this appearance of the I existing from his own side, from the side of the body and mind, without being merely imputed by the mind. So this appearance. This appearance is that which needs to be negated. We are not, when we talk about object of negation, we are not negating the mere appearance of the self. That is not what is to be negated. What is to be negated is the I existing from his own side. There's this appearance of an I existing right there from the side of the body and mind without being merely imputed by the mind. Oh, that is what that needs to be negated. So our greatest difficulty our greatest difficulty is this. Distinguishing between these two in our own experience. Although their manner of appearing is completely different, so when we talk about this inherently existent I which does not exist, nevertheless it appears to exist. It appears there's this I existing from his own side, you know, right there from the side of the body and mind without being merely imputed by mind. So that appearance is that which we need to negate, which does not exist and which need to negate. But we are not negating the mere appearance of the eye. But in experience, these two appears to be mixed. And our greatest challenge is to see the difference between these two. And we are not able to distinguish in experience these two.
So
So we are not negating the mere appearance of the eye. So that exists. But we are not able to distinguish this from the appearance of an inherently existent eye. Yeah. So and our problems lies in this, yeah. Until we are able to distinguish this, you know, in our own experience. Until then, there's no way to move on, to move forward in this process of realizing selflessness.
Ani pa dala chasi, dala tombao, tombani taso se la, tukse la, titola ya samadaya, rawa.
So, in the heart of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra, there was the explanation of the profound fourfold, profound emptiness. Yeah. So, in the heart of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra, form is mentioned first, yeah. Whereby it says form is emptiness, emptiness is form. So by changing the subject to the self or the I, you know, then one we can think, we can analyze, you know, by changing form to the self, let's say, or I is emptiness, emptiness is I.
So
I is emptiness. That means that the I which exists, appears to exist from the side of the body and mind, you know, without being merely imputed by the mind. Oh, that I does not exist whatsoever. Although it appears, there is an appearance of such an inherently existent I, but it does not exist in reality. So the self, the actual I, does not exist in the way it appears, and therefore such an I is empty, it does not exist. So the I is emptiness. Yeah, and because if the I does exist in the way it appears to us as inherently existent, then it should be findable. So then you will look for such an I on the body and mind, you should be able to find it. But it is very clear that no matter where you look, when you look for this inherently existent eye, it cannot be found.
Okay,
so the object of negation, the inherently existent I, which appears to us, you know, that there's this real I from the side of the body and mind without being merely imputed by the mind. So such an I does not exist. For if it exists, it can be found, you know. So if you look for such an I amongst the body and mind, you will not be able to find it, you know. So although it appears, it does not exist in the way it appears. And therefore, such an I is empty, empty of existing in such a way. Yeah. So therefore, I is emptiness. Yeah. So the nature of the I is emptiness, whether it is form or the I. And so here we're talking about the I is in the nature of emptiness. But although the I is in the nature of emptiness, it is not to say that the I does not exist. The I does exist. So how does I exist, you know? So the I exists as a mere appearance. Mere appearance. And therefore, emptiness is I. So by thinking how I is emptiness, emptiness is I, then one comes to understand how the I does not exist in the way it appears to us. Yeah. So the I is empty of existing in the existing inherently. The I is empty of existing in the way it appears to us. Yeah. So the nature of the I is emptiness. But yet, the I does, if we're not saying that the I does not exist, the I exists. So how does the I exist at the end of the day? It is I exists as something that is which is merely imputed by and thought. I exists as mere appearance. So this is how the I exists. It is said that one should not have any partiality, you know, whether one is partial or biased, you know, one is supporting only emptiness, but you know, neglecting appearances, or one could be biased, you know, and you know, in favor of appearances but neglecting emptiness. Yeah. So if one goes down such a path, one will never realize emptiness. Yeah. So one should not in the name of appearance deprecate emptiness, and one should not in the name of emptiness deprecate appearances. Correct understanding of mere appearance should elicit an understanding, help one elicit an understanding of emptiness. And correct understanding of emptiness should help one elicit a correct understanding of appearance. So they're mutually, they're complementary.
Any
So yeah, this is how, you know, by because of the reason that it is an initial suffering, therefore it is selfless. Yeah, by understanding selflessness, then by understanding how the I does not exist in the way it appears, then one is able to uproot, you know, this ignorance, which is an apprehension of a self, which is the very root of all the suffering. And it is by uprooting the root of suffering, then you'll be able to achieve, you know, nirvana, which is peace. Okay, so then back to the text. So next is looking at the validity of the benefits of the engaged mind of enlightenment or engaged mind generation. Okay, then verse 26. How can I fathom the merits of this jewel mind, the cause of joy of all migrating beings, and the panacea for the suffering of sentient beings? So if the aspirational mind generation has all the above mentioned benefits, then it goes without saying that the engaged mind generation would have even greater benefits. So next verse, if merely a benevolent intention, so there is a citation from this particular sutra requested by Viradatta, which establishes on the benefits of this engaging mind. So this sutra says, the merit of the mind of enlightenment, if they were put into form, all of the sphere of space would be filled. It is even more than that. If merely a benevolent intention excels venerating the Buddhas, then what need to mention striving to make all beings without exception happy?
Okay,
It is said in the King of Concentrations Sutra that the benefits of the benefits of even just the thought wanting to achieve enlightenment for sentient beings is more powerful than the merit one accumulates for making numberless offerings to billions of Buddhas. So if in aspirational mind generation, if the merit of the aspirational mind generation is more powerful than the merit one accumulates for making offerings to billions of Buddhas, then obviously the benefits that one gets from the engaged mind generation would even be more powerful. Here, when we talk about the engaged mind generation, we are talking about a mind of enlightenment that is actually conjoined with the practices of the bodhisattvas, such as the practice of the perfection of generosity and so forth. So a qualm is raised here. Sentient beings wish for happiness and do not want suffering. And by striving in this way, they are able to achieve happiness and abandon suffering. Therefore, aren't they not proficient or skilled in achieving happiness and abandoning suffering? Why should others strive for their purpose?
That's the one question Habsyn was asking before also. No? Same one, yeah? Huh? Is that tongue Habsyn, so why I need to get enlightened? No? I think similar question, yeah, something like that. What does it mean? That is why I like it. That is why I like it. 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 I like it.
And the answer to that is in the next verse. Although wishing to be rid of misery, they run towards misery itself. Although wishing to have happiness, they like an enemy, they ignorantly destroy it.
So chese ani childa khaso ta lagna lopa la chuke shi yumde ki yare sta chi kam
so everybody is the same in not wanting to have a short life. Nobody wants to be poor. Nobody wants to be sick. Yeah. So everybody, you know, everyone does whatever they can to avoid these things. Yeah. And although nobody wants to have a short life, but people are killing. Although nobody wants to be poor, but they are stealing. So they are engaging in actions that are contrary to what they are looking for.
That dungal dugu yamati na ya that dunga yikula that but rangshin ge chukde shi aro tunda desuma that dungal dugu yamati na chenki ya shibu ne dunga dugu yamati lagla ngomala ya dunga yikula chukde shi doba ote suma ya.
So the teachings are telling us that although nobody wants problems and suffering, although that's the goal of everybody, but in actualizing that goal, and many are actually creating the causes for suffering. If you light a candle in the dark, moths are somehow attracted to candle flames. Yeah. We don't see it, I mean, here in Singapore, but in many places, you know, where, you know, if you were to light a candle in the dark, then you see these insects and moths, you know, they're attracted by this flame, you know, and then they run and they fly towards the flame, but then they get burned, yeah. When the moths are attracted, you know, by the candle flame, there's something that attracts them. And then they fly, you know, in pursuit of that attraction. They fly towards the candle flame. But the moth is not thinking of committing suicide, you know, by flying to the flame. It's looking for something, yeah. But nevertheless, it gets burned by the candle flame. So likewise, sentient beings want happiness, but then they are naturally pulled into creating they naturally run towards the cause of suffering, and in so doing, then suffer. So the teachings say that all of us, I mean, we are the same in not one, we are all the same in wanting to be rich, to have long lives and good health, yeah. But in practice, we don't guard our ethical discipline of avoiding the 10 non-virtues, for example. So, and on top of not guarding the ethical discipline of avoiding the 10 noble virtues, then sentient beings create, you know, immeasurable negative karma. And in so doing, you know, they act as if that virtue is their enemy. So they actually end up destroying virtue by seeing it, almost like seeing it, the virtue as an enemy. For those who are deprived of happiness and burdened with many sorrows, it satisfies them with all joys and dispels all suffering and clears away confusion. Where is there a comparable virtue? Where is there even such a friend? And where is there merit similar to this? So what verse 29 essentially is saying is that, you know, bodhicitta, the man of enlightenment, is the very thing that can dispel, you know, all the miseries, sorrows, poverty of the sentient beings, and it is bodhicitta that can bestow on them every happiness. So bodhicitta is that which bestows all joy, dispels all suffering, and clears away all confusion. There is nothing else like bodhicitta. So bodhicitta clears away confusion. It clears away, you know, the confusion regarding what is to be discarded and what is to be adopted. Yeah. So there isn't anything like bodhicitta. In terms of performing these functions, yeah. And one will not be able to find a friend that is like bodhicitta, who is able to eliminate all suffering, bestow all joy, and clears away, you know, confusion with regards to what is to be discarded and what is to be attained. Yeah. Well, I guess with regards to accumulating merit, yeah, there isn't any other kind of merit that is comparable to bodhicitta.
Shejang kalayu, sunam tenda kalayu, swatuksin, tatonda,
Okay. So that is the end of the section which talks about the benefits of bodhicitta. So I guess here the reply to the Quam would be that if one has bodhicitta, when one develops the actual bodhicitta, then one will be in a position to clear away the confusion in the minds of others, help the others clear away their confusion with regards to what they need to adopt and what they need to discard, clear away the confusion in the minds of those sentient beings who are running after the causes of suffering, although they want only happiness. So by thinking about the benefits of bodhicitta, then one strives to generate that which hasn't been generated, and one then prevents that which has been generated from degenerating. The point of reflecting over and over on the benefits of bodhicitta is so that one develops a real aspiration for bodhicitta. You aspire to generate it. Yeah. So by reflecting over and over on the benefits, and come the time or the day where you are really convinced that bodhicitta does indeed have these benefits, I stand to gain, I have all these benefits, then, only then, one would have a strong, stable aspiration or desire to want to achieve bodhicitta. Well, and this desire is like the desire for water, that a thirsty person has, isn't it? A person who's very thirsty is always thinking about finding water, So if one, at the end of the day, that's the whole point of reflecting over and over again on the benefits of bodhicitta, is so that you develop a strong aspiration to want to work to develop it.
다 자주 샘디 마제는 디기민도 원하지 다 파인 딘데다데 자주 샘디 마게나 타민도 다 돈나 파인 삼지다 냐가도 원해 잡을 치고도 마제는 타민 다 딘데게 다시 다 돈이 좀 받아 오시다 어다 게 투바이나 다 원하지 다 다 자주 샘디 파인 테베 다 고가 되시다 고가 님보 좋을 때
So upon hearing and then reflecting over and over again, sustained reflection on the benefits of the advantages of bodhicitta, and based on that, you know, when you have this thought, you know, thinking that, oh, really, this bodhicitta is something that I must develop, I really must seek this bodhicitta. So when such aspiration for bodhicitta arises, then this will then fulfill the whole purpose of hearing and reflecting on the benefits of bodhicitta. But of course, since we don't have bodhicitta, it is quite, you know, like we don't feel anything for the benefits of bodhicitta. We just kind of wonder, you know, is this really true? No? I mean, how is that possible? No? Yeah. So at this stage, you know, of development, other than relying on the Buddha's speech, you know, I mean, it's really difficult at the initial stages to develop or to infer even that there are such benefits. Bodhicitta is, of course, quite out of reach for us, and it's difficult. But as I mentioned the other day, developing some equanimity and based on that, some love and compassion is possible and within reach here. Yeah, by thinking of how we need to rely on others, how and therefore for that reason how others are kind, and by you know, one can come also to develop some kind of equanimity without having adverse or very strong anger towards some. And very strong attachment for others, so it's possible to do that. And on the basis, you know, to develop, you know, some sincere feeling of wanting everyone to be happy and wanting everyone to be free of suffering. So when we are able to bring about such thoughts like equanimity, love and compassion, then the mind becomes more relaxed, less uptight, yeah. Definitely. And of course, on top of that, you know, if one can develop bodhicitta. I mean, you know, if we develop bodhicitta, we can kind of infer, right, that the benefits must be even greater.
어떡치네 다 내지르샤 어떡치네 다디 다데 다지 팬여다 메시지 다 오늘지 소소 답하겠다 가서 세미시 어떡하던 시원 세미시 고메 통네 다도 없습니다 갈래 갈래 섬도 땅네 다지 근데 이제도 가나 아니 그런 게 섬도 멘도 유무도 멘도시네 다 소소 냠용다 다시 또 콜레 컴바게 했네 이사래
So I mentioned about the practice of the four immeasurables yeah, in the previous lesson. Yeah, so you have to try out for yourself, see whether it works or not. Yeah, okay. I mean, in terms of practice, that is the first step we have to take. Yeah. Okay, so this next is explaining how it is how those individuals who have the real bodhicitta in their minds, how they are worthy of homage.
Yeah.
If whoever reciprocates benefit is worthy of some praise, then what need to mention the bodhisattva who does good without it being asked of him? In the worldly sense, when somebody receives help from another person, then the beneficiary, normally the beneficiary would praise their benefactor, right? By saying, "Oh, the person was really indeed, he was really very kind. You know, he did this, he helped me." So in the worldly sense, the beneficiaries do praise their benefactors, isn't it? So if that's the case, and then it goes without saying that the bodhisattvas are worthy of homage and worthy of being objects of to whom we make offerings because they help the sentient beings without sentient beings asking. And the help that the bodhisattvas render to the sentient beings is not some small little thing. The bodhisattvas work for the happiness of sentient beings, the happiness of this life and the happiness of all their future lives. Yeah. So as such, you know, bodhisattvas are worthy of homage and worthy of offerings. Uh, The world honors as virtuous a man who procures mediocre food and for an instant gives it disrespectfully to a small number of beings that satisfy them for only half a day. Then what need be said then of one who constantly bestows the unsurpassed bliss of the Sugatas for a long time upon countless sentient beings, fulfilling all their hopes? So here is an example of a man who gives food to some people. The substance here that's given is food, and the time and the period we're talking about is a very short while. And it's not giving to many beings, it's a couple of sentient beings. And it's not that he's giving a lot of food as well, he's giving food enough for them to not be hungry for half a day. And the manner of giving is without respect. But even then, a person who does this will be regarded as quite a good person in this world. Oh, no, he's very generous. No, you see, he's helping the poor. No? He's doing something for the poor, isn't it?
Oh, today, na, ani je kap de da da xin jia chao wa, da sim je da nang ge ta ban ni, sim je chang le jia ba, ro wa da sim je jing yi ba, chang le jia ba, suo ting de xia xie. Ani tui de tong du ma de, da kua xi shi ma shi ge ba, ro wa, tu xin ni, da da kang de de, da wo bu pei ban ting de mian ba de, ga shi ni, da a de wo shi bei, an sa ban, ani ji ni, sa ban la na mi.
If there's such a person who gives just a small amount of food to a small number of sentient beings for a short duration in a disrespectful manner, is praise, you know, is worthy of praise. Then what need is there to mention of those individuals who work for all sentient beings until the end of samsara and who gives sentient beings the highest uncontaminated bliss of full enlightenment, completely with doing all this with the attitude of love and compassion? It goes without saying that such an individual is, of course, praiseworthy. The Buddha has said that someone who generates an evil thought against such a benefactor as a child of the victors will remain in hell for as many eons as there were evil thoughts.
chik shiwe ji ta wana chik pendo chi tenye kansa chi la ane chik ta tonda itere tenye chanju kapte ta chanju samba te la ane chik ta ane chik kaswa ya ta rangi ta nyesim kya ba wa tenye chik kya ba ina ane kondro lamba wa tenye chik kya ba ina shiwe ji te kuchimbo res ane chik kye ji ane kondro sabi kye ji ki changda nyamba ane nyawa ro ane donga nyongu res oto sin ta tishin sheba to sung yo res oto sung ya.
So it is said that the Buddha has taught that anyone who generates develop anger and evil thoughts towards the bodhisattvas will have to be born in the hells for as many eons as there were moments of anger.
Oh, toxin, that in the age, that on that, toxin, that on that, the Sungu are, that in it. Toxin, that in it, that changes some of that in the age that you cast off that, missing Kevina, that in the age that the question will young Kuyana, and Karswata, and changes some of Tela, and is it table. Tabakabina, and Solom Kariorista, or the Sumala Tilena, Calde, Kanshi, Yirab Tangchena, Tidu, Tivet Hopper Pell, says that.
If moments of anger can have such destructive consequences, moments of anger towards a bodhisattva can have such destructive consequences, then what are the merit or virtues that can be accumulated if one develops, if one has faith in them? So it says, but if one acts out of an attitude of faith, its fruits will multiply far more than that. So it is said that those who act out of faith in relation to bodhisattvas will experience results, you know, far more than that. That meaning you know, how Xi Jinping has to be born in the hells for as many eons as there were moments of anger,
yeah. So
So the bodhisattva is a special object, yeah. It's a very powerful karmic object, yeah. So any evil thoughts or anger directed at bodhisattvas will have grave consequences, and whatever virtuous thoughts directed at bodhisattvas will have very will lead to very powerful positive results.
What to say? That in a man, Jason, to judge Chibeja, the one in Jawan Hunky Pills, says that on the show.
Even in adversity, the children of the victors generate no negativity. Instead, their virtues naturally increase.
What to say? That in the Chidan, that changes the Chanju Samba Tinzola, Benata. Benata, Kuala Sopata, and it's Nola Sopata, and it's that Nazala Sopata, and Dala Sopa, and it's Nurse Mongo, which is Kingi, and it's Kaswara. But in the Kandeji, that King Kandeji Chumaina, that on that Tigi, that go, Jenchimum dress, Tadun, that King and Tigi, that day, that King Yama Tanja. Young to go by, 양도 고발시 봤다 조수 체체 아니 지다 전주 삼아서 아니 겨와서 권에 권 망을 펴고 지그랬어 어떻게 숨어있어
So it is said that the bodhisattvas, no matter what kind of adverse conditions they meet, you know, even dangers to their life, to their health, or you know, to their possessions and so forth, it doesn't affect them. You know, it doesn't cause them to generate negativity. But instead, you know, they're able to use these adverse conditions, you know, to increase their virtues. Yeah.
Yeah,
so it's stated that for the bodhisattvas, you know, no matter what adverse conditions they meet, you know, it doesn't harm them, it doesn't cause them to generate negativity. Instead, you know, it encourages them to increase even more, you know, their qualities, their virtues.
Yeah.
I prostrate to the body of he in whom the sacred precious mind is born. I seek refuge in that source of happiness who brings happiness even those who harm him. So I prostrate so the verse is saying I prostrate to the person who possesses in his continuum the mind of enlightenment which eliminates both the problems of samsara and nirvana. And also one is prostrating to the bodhisattvas who only benefit the sentient beings, even those who harm them. So in short, the person who develops the bodhicitta, the bodhisattva, is an object of homage and offerings. For all humans and gods.
What does it that Tindig and Sim Sambo? I am the Chabajan Dending and Tella, Anishita, Carsonata, Nervous Sam Jabba, Anishita, Retta, Tinde Chumina, and Tikwashimachai, Anita Shuana, Tedua, and Sim Chabajan Consadilla, Anishan Tabina, and Java Chabajin in the Chabapoina, Son of Bottom of Messiah, 어떻시네 랑기다 지가에 남주 있대 바이나 손아 바도 나가사야 어떻게 숨도와 제가
So it's a great negativity to harm a bodhisattva, and one accumulates very powerful virtue from making offerings, paying homage to the bodhisattvas, even just by showing a pleasant demeanor to the bodhisattva, one accumulates a very powerful merit.
어떻습니까? 제단 다티 다 가르스나 다티래 제단 남주 랍샤티스 티래 다티래 이자 당당 장바스 다 먼저 다 가르스나 등배 두시 깨고 그래서 다 그게 몇몇은 담자진 수인도 가라 랍샤 지금 안 티도와 담자라다 심지 담자라 등배 두시 깨받을 장고 그래서 시다 돈다 그러와 즉 다티 장한테 做 티래 做 마태바 도야가 시도 그러와 아니 심지 수지 나야 등배 두시 대시 독신은 섬땅 바이나 아니 마태바 과해 그러와 어떻신에 다 조조니 티래 다 바로 뭐 강사리 장주 선바이나 학국 면장다 장주 선바 도지를 당하지 공도 기지 사바이나 휴지 되고 때 도치 목사야지 대장도 딘데가 납차라 다 탐자라 한 뜸에 두시 장지 당만 장고를 세다 민주 탐자 주 송도 다 딘도 학과 도 출신하고 출신하는 용도가
So when one adopts the aspirational when one adopts through a ritual the aspirational bodhicitta that comes with a commitment, then one needs to abandon the four black dharmas and cultivate the four white dharmas. And one of the things to be cultivated is to generate the recognition that all sentient beings are like one, the teacher, like the Buddha, yeah, like the teacher as a founder, the founder. Yeah. So the point is to train in pure appearance in relation to all sentient beings, precisely because one doesn't know who the other person is. And so in this case, one doesn't know exactly who is and who is not a bodhisattva. And as we have seen earlier, if we get upset, we get angry at a bodhisattva, then we accumulate, we destroy so much merit here. We accumulate so much negativity here. So, in our context here, so I think many people have already taken the bodhisattva vows, and many also have taken the tantric vows through various empowerments here. So, in that sense, everyone can be said to be kind of special, yeah, a special object, yeah. And in that sense, then to regard, you know, one another without anger or without showing unpleasant or disrespectful demeanor. So if we can think along these lines, it will be beneficial.
So
And even if we do see or notice some faults in others, you know, the point is not to grasp at the fault and to hold on to it so strongly. And in so doing, then you know, the chances of getting angry is lesser. So we could reflect on the faults, you know, that we see as being impermanent. It's not as if the faults will always remain. And the faults are also not established from their own side. Yeah. And it's not that the faults has always been there. So the faults are adventitious in that sense. So, and the Buddha, the Buddhas who we have faith in now were not always Buddhas. They were also sentient beings once, full of faults. Yeah. So, when we talk about the training in regarding others as the Buddha, seeing others as the teacher, there is a basis for that in that sentient beings, although they are not Buddhas now, but they are amenable to be a Buddha in the future. They can be Buddhas. They have the Buddha lineage. They have the seed of enlightenment within them. They can become Buddhas. They can develop bodhicitta. So in that sense, you know, when we develop the recognition that or treat or look at sentient beings as our teacher, as like the Buddha, so it is like paying respect and having regard for the cause. The cause in that they can be Buddhas one day. So just as we will regard the result, we also will regard the cause. So as much as possible, yeah. So the point is that we should try not to get upset, not to get angry, and as much as possible to focus on the qualities of others and not to hang hung up on the faults and grasping at it. Yeah. So in that way, then we will not get upset. But we focus on the faults and not grasp, and not get hung up on the faults. Yeah. And in our, and when we talk about sentient beings, yeah, sentient beings is not something that exists in the far away from us. You know. And the sentient beings are the people around us. And in our context, the people in the same class. So I mentioned earlier, many of you here have bodhisattva vows, have tantric vows, and in that sense are also a kind of a special object. So if we get upset and angry at one another, then we will also accumulate negativities. So yeah, so as much as possible, we just have respect for one another. Yeah. So this is very important. Okay, so that's the first chapter. So maybe time for one question.
So last lesson, you talk about Bodhicitta as well as Mahayana, my generation. And it talks about the boundaries being different. So it seems to imply that the definition for both Bodhicitta as well as Mahayana, my generation, to be different. So I'm just wondering what's the difference. Okay, I'll repeat the question again. In the last lesson, we talked about the bodhicitta as well as Mahayana, my generation, about the difference in terms of the boundaries. Yeah, one is from the path of accumulation until end of sentient beings continuum, and the other one is from path of accumulation up to the Buddha's ground. So it seems to imply that the definition of these two are different. And I can find the definition for Mahayana, my generation, from the Ornament of Clear Realization. I'm not too sure about the bodhicitta.
Your question
bodhicitta. Since the boundaries are different, it seems to imply that the definitions are different.
In general, bodhicitta is my generation. You will not find a definition for bodhicitta that is separate from that of my generation. So bodhicitta or mind of enlightenment is so called because it is a mind generation existing in the continuum of a bodhisattva. Because it is a mind generation existing in the continuum of a bodhisattva, it is called bodhicitta. Buddha is not a bodhisattva. For that reason, Buddha doesn't have bodhicitta.
Sect of Tibet. The Kwajina Tirita got Chanju Sendanta, Sengas and Chikwaras, that got to Lamna Tigret, and I'm just Chikwat was to be.
So, in general, as you could say, you know, most of the time you can generally you could say, right, bodhicitta is mind generation.
Mind generation is bodhicitta. They are all the same. Normally we say that. But to see that, did it, that shaman never came to that. Okay. But Sanjay is Changju Sama Mare, so they are Namsa and Changzo Kuru.
Well, of course, it may sound weird initially, you know, when you hear that the Buddha is not a bodhisattva.
No? Doesn't sound weird? Weird? Sounds correct? Buddha is not bodhisattva? I thought Buddha is bodhisattva, no? Anyway, so think about it.
This is about last week. You mentioned that love is the antidote for malice. If love is the antidote for malice, that applies to belligerence, because belligerence is the mind of malice as well. So in that case, compassion shouldn't be the antidote for belligerence. I remember in Middle Lamrim, someone asked you before whether non-harmfulness and compassion is the same thing, because the definition of non-harmfulness is the mind of compassion. Therefore, I think that compassion is the antidote for harmfulness. Because you mentioned that compassion is the antidote for belligerence. But if belligerence is a mind of malice, so in that case, love is the antidote for malice. Right?
I don't know, I cannot remember what is the Tibetan word for belligerence. So can you actually ask me? I say, I think so, I don't know.
What are you asking?
My question is, last week you mentioned that love is the antidote for malice. Belligerence is also a mind of malice. Therefore, compassion shouldn't be the antidote for malice. I remember in Middle Lamrim, someone asked you before, is the mind of non-harmfulness the same as compassion? Because the definition of non-harmfulness is a mind of compassion. Therefore, I would think that compassion is the antidote for harmfulness, not belligerence.
In general, when we talk about love and compassion, sometimes people kind of mix it up, things that is the same. Yeah, but love is a wish for others to be happy, and compassion is a wish for others to be free of suffering.
Yeah.
If one has the thought of, one has love, the thought of wanting others to be happy, the thought of harming others wouldn't be there, is it? And when one is focusing on a sentient being that is tormented by suffering and has a wish to free him from suffering, the thought of harming that sentient being will not exist. Yeah. Harmfulness will not exist. Yeah. And is there a difference then between harmfulness and malice? Malice or ill will, yeah. So is there a difference then?
We finish 51 mental chapter. Also, I forgot.
Back to the four immeasurables, right? We talk about the antidote for each of them to a particular thing. So all of them seems to be antidote to afflictions. But this thing about joy being antidote to dislike, I'm not too sure dislike is what affliction. Dislike can be dislike for a lot of things. So dislike for samsara is virtue, right? So dislike, dislike is what affliction. Is it resentment or?
Immeasurable joy is a thought not wanting others to be separated from happiness. It is a, in a sense, stronger than wanting others to have happiness. Yeah. A dislike would be the opposite of that, yeah. So instead of wanting others to not be separated from happiness, dislike is thought wanting others to be separated from happiness, yeah. Yeah, so the mind of dislike is the thought wanting others to be separated from happiness. So she begins to be the drum, real, she did the body, Sunday, she do me the Druka Namda, she much of a show, ye dango. Inge Wadi, Nyadu Dalamas. Ngo
Jesus,